with more of Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Whether it's snow at the end of April or an unusually warm January, climate change is on many of our minds. And while the change is having an impact on the things that grow here, the agriculture industry itself has an effect on the climate. The work of commercial growers emits as much as a quarter of the greenhouse gases released into the atmosphere.
And the journal Environmental Science and Technology reports the average American family's food consumption, whether it's burgers or potatoes, produces about 8 tons of carbon dioxide a year. Every step of the process of growing and distributing food has an impact.
But Lake Effect Farming contributor Dave Kozlowski, who co-owns Pinehold Gardens in Oak Creek, says changing the way we eat can have a real impact. He joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio this month to explain how small changes in our food consumption can help the earth.
Anything we grow and process and transport is going to provide greenhouse gases. It doesn't matter whether it's a carrot or a quarter pounder. So there's some climate change impact in food production, period. But livestock certainly can own the largest percentage of that. It is everything from all the product that has to be transported and fed to feedlot animals, to the what is referred to as the burp and fart problem with the animals, principally burping. They burp up methane gas largely, and methane gas is a very potent greenhouse gas, 30 times more potent than CO2. So a small amount can go a long ways. And there are millions of animals at any one time in the day burping. So it's producing quite a bit. So livestock, particularly cattle, are big producers of greenhouse gases. And the interesting thing about that, at least to me, is that I just always assumed it would be conventionally grown beef in feedlots that were the problem. And if we just got rid of them and we put all these animals on grass, that we would solve the problem. As it turns out, much to my dismay, that's not according to the studies I've seen, not quite the case. It is true that feedlot beef does produce a large percent of greenhouse gases. There's no getting away from that. But depending on how animals are raised on the grass will determine how much greenhouse gases they actually will emit. Whether it's corn they're eating or grass, the cows are still going to have intestinal problems. And there's still manure being spread. But the only way to really ameliorate that problem, and you're really not going to reduce the burping and the other thing, is to put fewer cows on more grass. Therefore, then the grass becomes a carbon sink. So there is a solution to that. And the way to do it, the way to begin, is eating less meat.
Yeah, on average, how much meat are Americans in particular consuming?
Well, the USDA suggests that we should be eating about 26 ounces a week. And the latest statistics I saw is we are consuming about 0.6 pounds a day. So a lot more meat than we need to be eating nutritionally and a lot more meat than we should be eating environmentally. And reducing the meat we eat can go a long ways. I mean, if we just cut down, well, let me put it this way. A way of sort of thinking about this is the average family food consumption contributes about 8 tons of CO2 per year. So what's a ton of CO2? A ton of CO2, if you can imagine this, is a cube 27 feet by 27 feet by 27 feet filled with CO2. Another way is a balloon 30 feet in diameter. That's what a ton of CO2 looks like. So if we think of a car with an average mile per gallon rating of 25 miles per gallon, traveling 12,000 miles a year, that car produces about 4.4 tons of CO2 on an annual basis. If we decide to go one day with no red meat, still consuming some chicken and some fish, if we decide to go one day with no red meat, you're basically lopping 760 miles off that annual basis. So you can see you're making a dent already in the CO2. If you go to an all-local diet, that is, you're consuming all your food only within, the studies didn't dictate what a local diet meant, but it would lop about the same thing, a little more, about 1,000 miles off the amount. So you're reducing a little bit of the greenhouse gases just by cutting out meat one day a week. And you're reducing a little bit by trying to buy more of your product, fruits, vegetables, et cetera, on a local basis. So are we going to turn back the clock on global climate change because you're eating less meat and buying locally? No. But, you know, the Chinese proverb, the 1,000-mile journey begins with the first step. So at least if we start making some effort, then the public is also becoming involved in the issue of turning around climate change. And perhaps then it will be easier to make the big steps, the big things that have to get done.
Right, because some people may see their changing habits as drastic if, you know, we were to suggest don't eat meat anymore, everyone go vegan right now and only buy produce from your local farms. But, you know, say to lessen that drastic change, as you said, just once a week of no meats would help a lot. But would you say, you know, it's hard to define local, but would you say it's relatively an easier process for people to find things that are at least Wisconsin made?
I think so, because you have to take in consideration that, talking about a little bit earlier, packaging and transportation aren't enormous contributors of greenhouse gases of product. I mean, cars are a big contributor, but just trucking things back and forth do contribute a significant amount, but it's not huge. It's the raising of these animals and the raising of the product that costs more. So,
and it wouldn't necessarily be big machinery that's used on these these farms and cattle ranches per se. You know?
Right. If you're thinking of being perhaps smaller farms, they may or may not have a lesser impact on greenhouse gases. But at least on a smaller farm, you've got the community around it has a little more control over what's happening there, as opposed to an owner of 10,000 acres in Iowa that's growing corn. You know, the community really has no impact on that farmer. So buying locally, Midwest, you know, perhaps could have an impact. And when we were talking about meat, we're really talking about, in the studies, they were just talking about one day a week cutting out any red meat. So they weren't saying, you know, you have to go completely vegan that day. It would help, but you don't have to.
Yeah, so still plenty of fowl options or fish and things like that. Yeah. One thing that I'm curious about, would you say we have regional food production in the United States as well? Because Midwest, you could call us the Corn Belts, soybean farms. California is known for certain types of produce that's being shipped all over the country and the world. So when it comes to diversifying our land once again, do you think that's possible? Or are we at such a stage in, you know, big agriculture that reintroducing certain crops to areas that have been one or two things for most of their modern life, you know, would that help in the long run and then help people be able to shop more locally if there's diversified crops?
If we start cutting back in the amount of meat we eat, then we can start cutting back in the amount of corn and soybean we grow. Now, I will get trouble about saying that from some farmers because you're cutting out my livelihood. Well, that's not the intent here. The intent is to break up maybe some of these 10,000-acre farms and have them start growing regional fruits and vegetables. That's entirely possible. And then we're not having to move it from California, which, again, transportation does have an impact on the climate. And California is going to have its own problems. Under a climate change scenario, California should get drier than it is even now. And the Southeast is going to get hotter than it is now. So we're not going to be able to move as much from there. And certainly creating a regional, local market for our food, whether it be meat or produce, is certainly doable. And it doesn't mean like reinventing anything. It just means a reuse of the land. Iowa State, the University of Iowa State, not exactly a bastion of liberalism. It's an ag school. Did a study. And they found that Iowa could become self-sufficient in 28 popular fruits and vegetables by just utilizing a county or two in that state and converting it to produce. So Wisconsin could do the same, Minnesota could do the same, Illinois could do the same, Indiana, Ohio, et cetera, et cetera. There are some states that might struggle with that, but that's okay. We'll produce enough and we'll ship it to them.
Now, on the note of shipping, one of the things that is very popular nowadays are the meal kits, and those, of course, are shipped to your homes. A lot of people see the packaging as very wasteful, and they may think that that is a big contributor to more carbon emissions, more energy, food waste, product waste of those things coming to your door for, what, a dinner, you know, not necessarily a week's worth of supplies, you know, for example, like CSAs. But a new study published on Monday from in the scientific journal Resources, Conservation, and Recycling, they took a look at the whole life cycle, so from farm to garbage can, of meal kits. And surprisingly, at least to my surprise, they find that meal kits and their grocery store equivalents, on average, store meals are producing 33% more greenhouse gas emissions than things and meal kits from companies such as, say, Blue Apron. You know, do you find that interesting?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a small produce grower, so I do have my problem with meal kits, but they're right. They're right. The more you can reduce waste, the more you're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions because the less things we have to grow and ship, right? I mean, currently, the U.S. wastes about 61 million tons of food a year. That's 31% of the annual supply. Well, if we can cut into that annual supply that's being wasted, that's less that we're having to grow and less greenhouse gases are having to emit. And if it takes meal kits, ooh, to do it, well, you know, we all have to sacrifice. So, you know, it's a good point. To me, the point is don't waste. Mm-hmm. Restaurants shouldn't be wasting. Grocery stores shouldn't be wasting. That's what we have to do.
And when it comes to the bottom line, you know, we have eat less meat, eat closer to home, eat more fruits and vegetables. You know, are there any things that you would suggest that changing our diet or including in that change of diet to take it one step further? Because, you know, as you mentioned, we see greenhouse gas emissions and climate change as this big behemoth of an issue. But with small little steps, can people just be a little more mindful of, say, how much heads of broccoli they're buying, that, okay, on average, how much am I throwing out at the end of the week because it's gotten rotten?
Right, right. Really, the takeaway here is if you can, reduce the amount of meat you're eating, particularly red meat. If you can, try to buy, and again, in an interest of full disclosure, I don't want to be self-serving here, but do try to find produce and even your meat as close to your home as possible. And then buy what you know you're going to use or preserve it, because a lot of what you buy during season can be canned or frozen or dried, and it's not a hard process, so then you're not wasting it. You're saving it for a time when you can't get that fresh produce.
What do you think with the packaging of produce to grocery stores in the first place? You know, things such as Aldi, they're packaging 3 red bell peppers in their own plastic bag, Brussels sprouts, saran wrap, things like that. How does that change come about when it comes to packaging food for wide distribution and sale?
Yeah, well, I don't have the studies in front of me about how much packaging actually contributes to the greenhouse gases, so it's a little bit difficult for me to say for sure. But just taking the meal kit example, if you're packaging something in smaller quantities and you know people are going to use that rather than taking it home and letting the potatoes sprout or the peppers rot because they thought they were going to use 3 pounds of it and they ended up not using that, well, then it's a good thing because you're at least not wasting it. But we, as a society, we have to go the next step back. Should the grocery store be buying all this just to fill their shelves up, knowing full well that in 2 weeks it's all going to get tossed into the dumpster? You know, that's the next step. We have to reach the middleman, if you will, in that process. Consumers can only do so much about the waste, and then it comes down to, you know, the restaurants and grocery stores and processing facilities. You know, a lot of things are harvested and taken to facilities where they're bagged, weighed, canned, whatever. And if it doesn't meet society's ideal image for a product that, you know, we have this one image of what an apple or a pepper looks like, they will toss it. And sometimes they find uses for it, but a lot of times it just becomes waste. So that 31% of annual waste is also on the processing side.
So we just need to be less picky.
We need to be less picky.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other end of eating less meat, more fruits and vegetables, obviously, you would hope we would also start feeling better.
That's the real win-win thing here. Right, right. So what we're saying, trying in reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the food that you're consuming, you're also making yourself healthier. And if you're buying locally, and particularly if you're buying organically, you're helping the environment and it's being healthier. So there's just not a good reason for the current American diet. It really is not. It isn't good for you healthy-wise. It isn't good for the environment. It isn't good for climate change. So let's start making a few changes. Let's start a little bit at a time each week. Eliminate this. Have a meatless Friday. We just passed Lent. Too bad. Yeah. But institute that, you know, year-round.
Do you think it'll be a struggle to do that, or are you optimistic about changing people's habits? I feel like especially meat eating is, you know, this is American way of life. You know, I'm going to have, you know, my steak or my burgers or whichever else.
And yeah, there's a lot of wrapped into that. There's the cultural aspects of, you know, I was raised eating a lot of meat. Mm-hmm. I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy.
Marketing blah, blah, blah. Of restaurants, everything.
Marketing, restaurants, right? You go to a restaurant, you'll get a big, you know, 6 ounces of something and then 8 ounces of something and then a little sprinkle of vegetables on the side. It's going to be a cultural change. And I don't expect restaurants to lead that. I expect it to the homeowner to, in their daily meals or weekly meals, to change some of that. But it's cultural issues you have to get over. It's, you know, people, diet issues. People think high-protein diets are really good for them. Well, in point of fact, they're not. So you have to get past that sort of myth. I am hopeful. To tell you the truth, I am hopeful. You know, even from a cost-cutting perspective, proteins, animal proteins tend to be more expensive than produce, so everybody should be looking into cutting some of their budgets.
Exactly. All right. Well, Dave, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Lake Effect contributor Dave Kozlowski and his wife Sandy Rodenz co-own Pinehold Gardens in Oak Creek. Kozlowski is a regular Lake Effect contributor, and you can listen to our past farming segments with him at WUWM.com.